This interview is part of a thought leadership study created by KPMG in collaboration with FT Longitude.
Today's global trade flows and supply chains are increasingly fragmented. Companies need to be flexible and fleet-footed if they're to withstand unpredictable shocks. Supply chain resilience is already proving to be a rate-determining factor. It is forcing leaders to carefully consider the balance and trade-offs between cost, risk, and agility. I'm Sean Kearns, Director of Strategy at FT Longitude, and in this series, we consider the how and the why of strategic shoring and the critical factors that determine its long-term success. In this episode, we consider the impact of the changing labour market on supply chain resilience. Joining me is Rick McDonald, retired SVP, Chief Supply Chain Officer at Clorox, and keynote speaker and consultant. Rick, thank you for joining me. As I mentioned, you recently retired from your role at Clorox, a company you'd worked at for 32 years.
I've worked up and down the supply chain over those 32 years, reported to general managers in what used to be the company's three divisions. So I've had P&L accountabilities during that time period. And most notable for me, obviously, was the COVID period, leading the company through COVID and dealing with all of the supply chain issues that occurred. It was an amazing time at the company. We went from a $6 billion company to a $7 billion company virtually overnight. Of course, that created all sorts of interesting supply chain challenges. And what I'm most proud of during that time period is we had our best ever safety record in terms of recordable injuries. We also had just no transmission of COVID during our facilities. We were absolutely keen on making sure we kept our employees safe and healthy, and we ran our plants. And we did both those things quite well during the COVID time period. Also notable is, right after that, we endured hyperinflation. You know, some of that's still around. And so we are continuing to work on improving our margins. And during this most recent quarter, we reported gross margin that's back to pre-COVID levels. And so we're very excited about that. Our case fill rates for our customers also back at pre-COVID levels. And so that's phenomenal. And then after the hyperinflation, we had a cyber attack. And so we spent about four and a half months running this $7 billion company on paper. And that's not something I would recommend to really anyone. However, we did it quite successfully. We recovered faster than we thought we were going to. And, you know, the company is fully and well on track.
So, Rick, was your shoring strategy a response to some of the scenarios you've just described, or would you say it was more proactive? And thinking about your supply chain strategy over the course of the last 5 or 6 years, what role did nearshoring play?
Yeah, one of the ones I'm thinking about most definitely helped during the pandemic. We had nearshored one of our brands from China into the Caribbean. And so, yes, that was a tremendous benefit for us. This is something, though, I think in most organizations, if they're not, they should be doing this. This is an ongoing activity, the assessment of your supply chains, their sufficiency for delivering upon the brand promise, and all of the commitments that are made both financially and from a customer perspective. That's all got to go into the mix as you think about when to nearshore, which brands to nearshore, and what the benefits will be from that activity.
As you just said, there are many factors that you need to balance when you're making the decision whether to nearshore or to onshore. So as you look back at your nearshoring journey, what have you learned and what surprised you?
For all of these efforts, the results at the end were terrific. You know, as I mentioned, we improved order lead times, significant cost savings. We avoided some tariffs. The regulatory environment was much more transparent. The involvement of the country government was appropriate. But, you know, the thing that we learned is, and I guess this is part of our, you know, our optimistic stance on a lot of things, is it always takes longer than you think it's going to take. The business that we moved required some very sophisticated tooling. So we had to cut new steel. That's got to get shipped. It's got to clear customs. You got to hang those molds. And then a brand new, and this is probably where we underestimated things the most, a brand new group of people who didn't necessarily have all the technical skills were asked to run that new equipment. And that was one of the bigger issues. You know, I would say just the evaluation of the technical capabilities and how long it would take to amass the right components of talent in the workforce and really kind of build that skill, that was probably the thing that we didn't assess and evaluate thoroughly enough.
Clearly, the need to think about skills and talent gaps as early as possible is really important when it comes to resilient supply chains. So what are some of the best practices that you've learned and you'd like to share with our listeners when it comes to this aspect of nearshoring?
Yeah. It's a definite thing to be thorough on and have as a watch out. I think insufficient research of the new country, the new location is probably one of the things that will trip up enterprises quicker than anything. You know, it's not just the regulatory environment, but it's the culture, it's the customs, could be the time zone, could be language barriers, ways of doing business, political stability, the economic condition within that country. You know, all those things can be less stable than you believe they are or will be. And so all that is part of the evaluation process. Now, in this one case that I started speaking about, we were dealing with an experienced third party who already had a small operation in that country. So the good news for us was they had already plowed a lot of that ground and had a great understanding of all those things that I just mentioned. Now, in a couple of other cases, when we went into some different countries, we actually went and found some experts in country who provided that sort of perspective and exposure to the regulatory environment, the compliance environment, the ways of working with the government and other offices that might be doing permitting or in some way would have an influence or a decision on how you shaped your business and how you were going to be able to operate. So those were very, very important. And that's my experience there has been that's an absolute must if you're going into a new country and into a new market that way.
That's interesting, Rick, because KPMG's research into this topic reveals that senior supply chain execs are currently leaning more towards nearshoring in the Americas than onshoring in the US. Why do you think that is?
Here's what's kind of behind things for looking more at nearshoring versus reshoring. First of all, during COVID, millions of boomer generation people retired unexpectedly, and they didn't come back after the pandemic. Generational population, you know, Gen X is a smaller population than the boomers. And so it's not for a bit before we get to the larger generations of millennials and Zs. You know, the other thing that's going on is job openings in the US are elevated. National Association of Manufacturers reports that only of the 10 manufacturing jobs that are available, there are only 7 people to fill those jobs. And that's an absolute number. That doesn't include whether people are actually qualified for those roles or interested in those roles. So we've got a talent and a numbers problem. And of course, wages are higher than they've ever been, approaching $30 an hour for, you know, non-farm production type activity. And, you know, of course, at the same time, we're all investing in plants and facilities. So we're consuming any available resource that's there. And the way that e-commerce has grown, you know, there's going to be an increase in warehousing requirements. And so square footage, a couple different groups that have evaluated this are saying the CAGR for increased warehousing space is going to be 8% between now and 2030. And so that's going to bring in a lot of requirements for new jobs, which is why I think organizations are looking at nearshoring. And they also, if they're not already, they should be on their digital transformation journey to balance the human assets with their digital assets. Jobs that are highly transactional, jobs that have a lot of data involved, jobs that are highly repetitive, those are great candidates for some sort of a digital intervention. And in many cases, we have people doing that work. They're holding systems together, maybe with a human bridge, or doing that sort of redundant, very data-laden activity. And all that can be accomplished using digital assets. So that was my pitch on why a digital transformation was necessary, but it also fits in with this idea of nearshoring. Not enough people, and the ones that are available are quite expensive.
Thanks, Rick. That sounds like really sensible advice for supply chain leaders. But as you look ahead, how do you think those shoring strategies are going to develop over the short to medium term?
Yeah, I think it's going to continue to increase. You know, part of this is based on what I've experienced at Clorox. Part of it's based on conversations I've had with a number of chief supply chain officers and chief operating officers. notably, many have a presence or had a presence in China, and they're reducing that footprint. So I think it's going to continue, and I think companies are going to look at Mexico, but they're also going to look at other areas of Central and South America, places where expertise has been developed in certain types of industries. And I think you'll see that continue as everybody looks for another competitive advantage and something they can do to improve their business and their operating profile. I think the other thing, just really quickly, maybe the second thing is, you know, the farther we get away from the pandemic, I think the more the topic of resiliency sort of fades in the rearview mirror, if you will. And honestly, I think it is still an underinvested element of all of our supply chains. I think particularly in the procurement space, the inventory management space, and distribution, all of those are ripe for, you know, for more effort in this space, whether it's about anticipating disruption. They're going to be more black swan, gray swan events. There's just no doubt about it. Whether you're anticipating it, whether you're delaying the impact, you know, resisting the disruption, or maybe most importantly, swiftly recovering, that's all got to be part of these decisions to nearshore or reshore or leave your supply chain the way it is. And I think the more that we can do of that, the better prepared we're going to be for these next events that are inevitable.
Rick, you've just highlighted there the importance of the resilience of supply chain, of having the right expertise to be able to make the right decisions. Thanks again for joining me today.
It has been my honor and pleasure to join you today, and I really appreciate you inviting me.
This interview is part of a thought leadership study created by KPMG in collaboration with FT Longitude.